I'm just going to keep this going a bit longer, though. This is great.
Yeah, we didn't discuss you in the intro. Imagine the intro.
It's loose. It's a Ramblecast. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Imaginary Movie Podcast. I'm taking over the introducing because, Dave, I've had enough of your shit. Welcome. Oh, Indiana Jones now. Welcome to this fantastic.
This is a really weird mix.
It's a medley of Academy Award winning composers. I don't know. It's just what it says on YouTube, Dave. I'm going with it. Welcome to this podcast. Today we are rambling. We are running wild, Francine, and we are rambling about the Academy Awards. We're running about the Oscars.
That's right.
And
it's another fucking white guy podcast talking about the Oscars.
It's just what you needed. Just what you demand and just what we're going to
say. White guys
talking
about the films that white guys think are the best. Usually made by white guys, starring white guys for white guys.
It's a circular economy of entrenched interests.
Where white men pat themselves on the back for funding and producing and often starring in movies that other white men pay to go and see. It's wonderfully self-contained.
Yeah, but I think we should be critical of the Oscars. Let's start off the top. Let's just go in there and say actually
that wasn't like you didn't interpret that as critical because it.
No. I'm allowing us, Dave, because I think that like the Oscars is this thing. It's been around for 96 years, so it's got some kind of like long standing. But you know, like are we connecting?
So does cholera, Sam. Do you know what I mean? Like, let's not, you know, oh, it's been around for a long time. So slavery was around for a long time, Sam, but maybe not an institution we want to respect and carry on, you know? I'm not likening the Oscars to slavery. However,
you literally just did. I think what I'm getting
Thank God I did it in the first 5 minutes of the podcast as well, so it's not just going to get buried when everyone switches off.
Yeah, this will really encourage everyone to listen to our fantastic hot takes. No, what I'm going for, I think, is that the Oscars is the cultural like touchstone that we have, isn't it? It's the one that we've got. And whether or not I think basically the Hollywood people deciding what is important is a good thing. I think it's well, here we go. We're here. Now what I would like to do to start with is compare maybe the films that have been nominated for say Best Picture versus like the top films, as in the films people went to see and made the most money. Because
before we do that, I just want to talk maybe just a bit about the definition, the term Best Picture. Like we talked about, it's 96 years, and obviously keen fans of the podcast, like 2 to 3 doctoral students in film studies, know that we're doing a series, a very poorly thought out and conceived series where we watch all the best pictures
from the start.
And so we started in 1928/9 with a silent movie, and we're now
it's still the 30s
either 23 4 it feels like we've done about 400 of these movies, but we haven't. I think we've done 5 or possibly 6. Now the term best picture is interesting, isn't it? Now it's wildly vague what that means, because it does not mean the best picture, because that's a, how do you even suggest that, does it? It's not like,
okay. Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, it's not the best movie of that year, usually. There's a bit of argument to be had. But it's also not like Time's Man of the Year, where it's like, regardless of quality, it's more just about impact, you know? Like, Hitler was famously Time's Man of the Year. Like, and I think by that definition...
For invading the Sudetenland. Yes, so what you're saying
it's
is...
It's for being so influential and relevant and talked about within that year. And I think that the Oscars is sometimes that. And like when Gladiator won it, which is a fine movie, which I really, really enjoy, but it's... Should it have won the best picture? Anyway, that's a conversation we're going to have on our other feed in 7 to 8 years.
Several years, yeah.
But it's the Oscars, the best picture especially, which is obviously that's the most Oscar-y Oscar, that's the big one, you know, that's the flagship award. And it straddles that line of like, sometimes it goes to the most relevant, you know, the most culturally relevant movie of the year. Sometimes you can argue it goes to the best movie of the year, like when The Lord of the Rings won it several times. You know, like, it's hard to argue that one. And then sometimes, which we've had in the past, it goes to the movie starring the actor that everyone feels has been snubbed the most times, like The Revenant starring Leonardo DiCaprio, which is a good
pretty
movie,
but
maybe not like the best picture.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And that's where I think it's really fascinating to look at the movies that make money, because that's the, and at least this is, you know, a kind of at least a Western take, but like, we're looking at movies that are influential and important when we're talking about the Academy Awards, and your definition of greatness, just like Hitler, you know, no, people aren't sitting down and necessarily
enjoying. That's not
enjoying,
the point I was making.
No, I know. but they're not necessarily sitting down in the cinemas in droves to watch Killers of the Flower Moon, for example, because they couldn't, because it was on Netflix, on whatever it was, Disney or Netflix. Like, so,
best example, Sam, did Schindler's List win Best Picture?
Schindler's, it's a good question that you, that
but that's the example of like what a fantastic, amazing movie that obviously no one, not droves of people went to see. It made lots of money, but like, it wasn't, you know,
it did win the Best Picture in 1993.
Yeah, and that's a great example of a movie that deserves to win Best Picture, but it's not, like, that's going against it being a popularity contest, because while that's a really great, important movie, it's also a really, really hard watch. That's our white whale of a film, which we will never ever do for the podcast. We might even skip it on the best pictures because, you know,
yes,
what I mean?
Yes. Well, no, that we're never ever doing that, and skipping it on the best pictures.
That's what I just said.
I know, that's what I'm saying. But skipping on the best pictures is like a real, like, but then we won't have done them all. And that's the point, isn't it? That's the point. Like, surely we're split, but then maybe what? Like, I guess we could.
Are we really
going to
have a 2-hour conversation about the Holocaust on our stupid podcast where we make fun of movies?
I really feel like that would be not a wise thing for us to do. But anyway, that's a problem for now. So let's talk about the top movie of 2023. A little bit of a quiz for you, Dave. What is? No, don't worry. What is the top movie of 2023?
As in made the most money?
Yeah. What is it? Come on, you know this. This is
Barbie.
Easy.
Barbie, right?
Barbie. Now, Barbie was nominated kind of weirdly, do you think? Like, I feel like that's like a nomination that is acknowledging the fact that this is a really popular movie that was very good, when we've our views are known, that we enjoyed it, and maybe there were shortcomings, so it was fine. But that doesn't
feel... I
think
this movie should have won.
Do you think?
I think, going
back
to my Hitler
fits,
argument,
though?
Right?
Here's the question.
Going back to my
Hitler
argument.
Does it hit, though? Does it feel like an Academy movie? And that's where I think the difference is.
No, because it doesn't feel like a load of stodgy old white men are going to vote for it, which is what the Academy is largely made up for.
And they didn't.
Think it should have won, because I really do think the best picture, in my mind, I think it should be like Times Man of the Year. I think the best picture should go to the most influential,
notorious,
zeitgeisty movie, notorious movie of the year. Now, obviously, there's a caveat there where it has to still be like a watchable movie. It can't just be, you know, The Blair Witch.
The Human Centipede 3.
Someone's fucking... Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think Barbie... Barbenheimer was the biggest, like, probably one of the biggest, like, hashtagged terms. One of the most, like, probably of the last 12 months, right?
It brought cinema back from the post-COVID doldrums.
And I think that it really, number one, I think that the reason so many people saw Oppenheimer is because of Barbenheimer and because of Barbie. I don't think it works if you pair Oppenheimer with another, like... you know, atomic bomb movie or whatever, or like, you know,
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Flower Moon. It doesn't work. Like, oh, Killenheimer? Oh, no, that's still just Oppenheimer. Like, you've not... But Barbenheimer is unique, I think, because of the contrast between the two movies. I think Barbie especially really captures something about the era that
so
we're
why
in
do you think,
2020s.
So
the
why
inclusivity
do you think...
in that movie in a non-tokenistic way... The challenging sort of like patriarchal views, and refer back to our Barbie episode where we were talking
exactly
about
so hold
movie.
On hold on so why like, do you think why do you think that it should that it deserves to win then? Because I think that are we saying basically because it's the top grossing movie that it should win? Now before you answer that, I will give you what was the second top grossing movie of 2023?
It's either going to be a Fast and Furious movie or it's going to be a
horror. Oh, it's so close. It's you're incorrect. Super Mario Brothers the movie.
Now
I've seen
that. I'm not trying to say
hold
though.
On,
I don't
hold
think
on.
It necessarily means the yeah. film the most people saw. I just think it's Barbie. I think had the most chatter. It had the most cultural impact. It seems to have gone away very quickly, which I think hurts it in the it did hurt it in the best picture conversation. I feel like it's talked about a lot less now than it was even 3 months ago, whereas Oppenheimer, because
that's,
you know, I think has been talked about in a bit more of a long-lasting way, but
yeah. but that's where
still
hold
an
on,
argument to
because
be
I think that's
Barbie
where Oppenheimer
is like
really
important cultural thing. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, I'm just I think Oppenheimer is I think that's where I think we are maybe seeing the difference, because I think in terms of that long-lasting effect, it feels to me after watching Oppenheimer in the cinema and really really enjoying it but having some criticism of it, I am gonna think I think a rewatch is in due, you know, is very much needed, because I think that movie is gonna age very very well. I think that movie is going to become one of those touchstone films of the decade in a way that I think Barbie is, but then we're all gonna Barbie's gonna get chewed up and spat out.
Barbie is going to be watered down by the My Little Pony movie, by the standalone Ken movie, by all the other clones
yes.
of trying to recapture the financial success of this movie.
The self-aware
the
movie
Action Man movie is going to really kill Barbie's cachet.
Yes, exactly. And it's going to be
Action
and it's
Man
going to be
just the UK. It's hard to know. I was G.I. about to say G.I. Joe movie, but they've already done that like 10
yeah.
years ago.
Yeah. Right.
I will say actually I think Oppenheimer is the better movie in that classic sense. It's made by an auteur-y director. It's really clever. It's good. It's long as fuck. Which I don't mean in a bad way at all. I think we get on movies quite a lot on this podcast for being over 91 minutes, which is also fair. But like, this is long. It's bloated. Bits of it are in black and white. The sequence is all out. It's kind of like somewhat biographical and somewhat sensationalist. It's wanky movie, like movie lover movie. And I think that's probably why it won.
Yeah. But like a lot of Christopher Nolan movies, you kind of get away with it. Before, let's get into the best pictures category. We're not going to go through everything. We are just rambling. But I just want to give you a little bit of credit, because number three on the list was Oppenheimer for top grossing. Number four was Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. A particularly boring movie. And then coming in at number five, it's Fast X. So that would be
the quiz should have been which Fast and Furious movie was it? Couldn't possibly have guessed.
Because I think that's where, and just list off some other movies that come in. Across the Spider-Verse, Wonka, Little Mermaid, Mission Impossible, and then we go on and on. Like, we are the top 10 is what's that? Maybe three of the movies that are recognised in terms of the Academy Awards,
and that's quite often the case with especially the Best Picture.
Yeah,
with
just
the
two actually,
Gladiator,
just
which
two.
I think is the example that bucks the rule.
Mm-hmm.
But like, let's go through the Best Pictures briefly. I mean, I've only seen Barbie and Oppenheimer.
Yeah, I don't. I think because we haven't seen them, there's not really much point in us going in. And we're not.
Are there any that you want to see? Like,
well, we talked about Poor Things, and I watched the trailer for that, and that looks mad,
weird.
That looks mad, and I'm kind of into that as well. And I think as we go on, like, you know, probably, Dave, probably not. Do I want to watch like The Anatomy of Fall? Like, oh, Jesus, that looks fucking rough. Holdovers, like, maybe like Paul Giamatti's pretty good, but
I want to see Killers of the Flower Moon, which I know you don't, but that's fine. But I want
like
to see
I kind of do, but I just feel like I don't know. And this is where I think so much of our complaining is that as much as we don't want to watch Fast X, we also don't necessarily want to watch any of these movies. So it's like, well, you could legitimately ask listener, what the fuck do you want then? Like, what is it that you want from your movies? And I suppose it's about going through and enjoying films for the merits that they are presenting. And that's where a lot of these Oscar movies, they are trying to be kind of worthy. I'm not going to say Oscar bait, but they're trying to be worthy. They're trying to tell stories that are interesting, that are not just really popular. Even Barbie is quite a challenging film if you just rocked up and knew nothing about it. Like, we are delving into stuff that is not just surface level. So maybe there's something in between, but I think this year does very much feel like we are kind of navel gazing a little bit. Do you think that's right? Is that just really
best pictures every year? There's always a couple. The example this year that, like, you'll look at this list and obviously there are films we want to see, and films you don't want to see. Maestro with Bradley Cooper. No thanks. Bit of trivia for you, Sam. Apparently, he spent 6 years learning to conduct an orchestra to make this movie. And that just... there's nothing that turns me off more than some fucking wanky actor getting method over something so stupid. You're just waving your hands about, mate. No, you cannot convince me there's anything more to conducting than waving your hands around. Zone of Interest. Oh, it's a Nazi movie. Ooh, again,
it's not
massively appealing. Well,
it's
not even that, because occasionally, shocking, inside pizza here. That's not a phrase.
Inside pizza, I like it. Yeah.
Inside baseball, which also isn't a phrase we use over here. I occasionally watch movies just to watch a movie. I know that seems at odds with our monetizing watching movies to make this incredibly successful.
Yeah, where's the content then? Where's the fucking content?
Exactly.
Cheaping
out. But sometimes you just want to watch a movie, and a lot of the times, about half the best pictures are fluff, or in a year, or even, you know, 6 months, they're going to be like, well, what were we thinking about that? Why was that nominated?
That's a good point. That's a good point, because I think the Oscars are, as much as anything, they're about capturing the zeitgeist, aren't they? They're about capturing what's happening right now. And actually, when we look back to the 90s, our favorite decade, when things were simpler.
1890s.
Yeah, oh yeah, baby. Let's go. Brooklyn Bridge, let's do it. So, like, 19... Oh, I've just sorted it by the wrong thing. 1990 is Dances with Wolves.
Ooh.
Now, there's a picture that is like, oh, all right, Kevin Costner, cool. That's
30
interesting.
Years later, absolutely nobody is recommending you watch.
Exactly.
Nobody.
Exactly. So I think in that year, you've nailed it. That year, it's a big fat, you know, fail for the Oscars. A big fat, ow, like that sore. We're not doing that again. So skip forward again. 91, Silence of the Lambs. Okay, we're getting it. 92, Unforgiven. Oh dear,
great
Clint
movie.
Eastwood. But cultural standing, I don't think so. The big one. 94, Forrest Gump. Everyone's pissed about this. Like, fun movie, maybe.
Can we never
guess.
Do that either?
Oh no, I'd love to do it because I want to talk about how
Sam.
It's such an interesting film.
There's not enough
again,
wine in the world to float me through that movie.
But again, that film really sums up a lot of the look how fantastic we are. Look how, like, it's a very self. Confident movie, isn't it, about a certain generation who are all starting to really be able to make the decisions about the movies they make. So like, oh, let's you know, watch Vietnam, and we had Pulp Fiction, we had Quiz Show, we had Four Weddings and a Funeral, and we had the Shawshank Redemption in that year. What one of those movies is still talked about today, and that's obviously the Shawshank. So I'm not, let's not go through all of it, but I think it's interesting because then as we get into the 2000s, it becomes probably a little bit closer to going, oh yeah, most of these movies are kind of hanging around, except maybe Crash, Million Dollar Baby, like Hurt Locker, Slumdog Millionaire. Like, whew, I mean, these are fine films, but
I could not tell you a thing about Hurt Locker.
No.
Including before right this second that it won Best Picture.
Exactly. Now, what's my point? My point is that actually the Oscars, they're not useful. They don't serve a purpose, I think, until maybe after five years. After 5 years, I think we can start looking at movies and going, okay, like, let's reimagine it. Let's re-examine these now, because I think without that perspective, without the context that I think we need for over a decade, it's where I think we're going to fall short. And I would say I think Oppenheimer is probably going to hold up in that sense.
Hopefully,
it'll hold up.
I will pause it. Have you seen Christopher Nolan? Have you seen any of his old movies lately? So like Memento or the Batman's Inception?
Not lately, but I am fairly familiar because obviously fucking.
Well, I'm asking because I think that Nolan is I wouldn't even say singular director. I think he's like the preeminent sort of wanky artsy, but still somewhat mainstream appeal director that we've got at the minute. Loads of cachet, can basically go and do what he wants. And Oppenheimer was great. Again, refer back to our episode, which I don't even think you were on, Sam. I think you were called away for a
I think my child may have through. Woken up at some point during that, yeah.
Yeah. But you look back at Nolan's filmography, and Inception's the big one, I think. I think the Batman films probably aren't as good as we remember, partly because we were 20 years old when they came out.
Yes. I think so.
But Inception, I didn't watch at the time because streaming TV wasn't what it is now, so it wasn't quite as click of a button-y. Uh-huh. And I watched it maybe 5 years or so afterwards, and I could not have been more underwhelmed and bored by that film.
Wow, that's a hot take.
I don't know if being bored by Inception or confused or underwhelmed are hot takes now. I think they were when it came out, but this is what I'm trying to say, is that even a great auteur-y director, and I think I've watched Memento about 5 years ago, and that holds up okay. And the Batman films are, well, they're Batman films, they're very loaded, but even just looking at this one director who's seen great success and is very lauded, I think that there is like a time factor with these movies where Inception especially is capturing something about the culture and something about the zeitgeist that is happening at that exact moment, and I think you lose something when that moment's passed.
Yeah, and we can't tell in the time, can we? We can't tell.
Exactly.
The significance of...
And
of...
I agree with you. I think Oppenheimer in 5 years will still be a really good movie. And going back to the saying about Barbie, I think Barbie should win. I think that Barbie in 5 years will not be the same as it is now. I think that will have aged, not even necessarily poorly, but I think that there'll be a lot more baggage to that movie in 5 years than Oppenheimer, which, partly that's a period piece and things like that, but it's interesting to see how we move on from these things, especially trying to assess it at the time. It's difficult, isn't it? It's easy when we go back and we watch, All Quiet on the Western Front from 1931. That's fantastic. It's nearly 100 years old. Like, so of course we, hindsight's 2020, and we can sit and have a really clever, incisive, well-informed conversation about it because we've got nearly a century of academic debate on the topic to draw on. Even for shit movies like Broadway Melody, we've got 100 years.
Tell.
Of this kind of movie.
Yeah, well, and we can tell that it's a shit movie. And that's what I've really enjoyed about going back and watching the old films, is that actually, holy crap, All Quiet on the Western Front is an incredible film that you should absolutely sit down and, you could sit and watch it. It's great. It's so good. It's so, so good. Whereas a lot of the other ones are not. And we can tell the difference because we've got that context. But I do think that I do think it is fascinating to explore our kind of impressions now. Now, in what I would love to be able to do, Dave, and have if I had limited time and we could do this podcast professionally, patreon.com. No, I would love to be able to have watched every single one of the Best Picture nominees. But then
think about doing this every year because it's six movies. It's six movies and they announce them two months before they happen. Yeah. It's actually, Sam, it's not that difficult. Like you're saying, oh my God, if I had £1 million, I would watch the best pictures before the Oscars. And it's like, no, we don't even need that, Sam. You could even the ones that aren't streaming for free, you could rent for under £20 all of the best pictures.
but what I'm saying is we don't do it. You think about doing it every year and we don't do it because I think actually...
It's the same reason I don't watch the awards ceremony, Sam.
You
value your time differently, don't you? And you think, well, because ultimately we could have watched six movies. We could have both watched all six of these movies. And then what? We've watched them.
Yeah. And then one of them wins. And I think not to drag out this conversation much more than it needs, but I think so much of the Oscars for me is about their historical sense. I'm so uninterested in pretty much all the other awards, like Best Actor and stuff. Cillian Murphy actually was, I think performance is really good, and I think it's one of the ones that you completely forget who that actor is and he becomes the character. I haven't seen, I think we should do Poor Things next, actually, or maybe yes. soon, because I'd like to watch Emma Stone and see, because it feels like a film that is going to be absolutely tied to her performance. And if you don't have that, if you don't get that right, and it sounds like they did, then it's all going to fall apart when you've got such weirdness you
it
need.
It also seems like one of the movies on the list that I think most out of all of the movies on the list, I think, is more... the least mainstream appeal. It's supposed to be weird, even for movies we watch, and we're like degenerate film nerds. I think people, it's meant to be out there, so I do think we should watch that. I also think actually we should watch Past Lives, which is a dramatic film about a woman reconnecting with a childhood friend, but which doesn't sound like the kind of movie we watch for the podcast at all. But I saw the trailers when I went to see Oppenheimer, and I read about it in Empire magazine, because I live in 2004 when people still get magazines delivered to their door.
What an intellectual.
Really, really good. I know. I'm intellectual because I'm reading Empire magazine. I'm intellectual to a 14-year-old in 1998. I'm really intellectual.
Which is right basically now, what you are, yeah. Yeah,
which is basically what I am, yeah. And that looks, Past Lives looks really, really good in it. In a kind of the opposite way to Poor Things. Poor Things looks like a really weird, sort of strange, unsettling movie in a good way. Whereas Past Lives looks like a sort of cozy jacket almost, and it looks really well made, and the cast is doing a really good job in the footage I've seen, and it's reviewed really, really well. I'm kind of surprised it got nominated for Best Picture, but that seems to be a nod to just how good it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess it's important to have that as it's important to understand, isn't it? It's important to understand, and maybe that's what we could do next year. Well, we could try and in the build, but then I don't want to become just the Oscars podcast, because I want to watch 90s Van Damme action movies as well.
Try and watch one or two big movies next year, and then if they're nominated, great. Oppenheimer's great because we went to see it because you love the bomb. How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
I wasn't worried about it before. Fine. If I'm enthusiastic.
We only went to see that really because you have this weird obsession with nuclear fission, which is fine, and not at all concerning. And then it was the best picture because it just happened to be one of the best movies of the year. And I think we should just do that again. Let's just there'll be the movie like Napoleon we talked about seeing. I talked about going to the cinema to see it. That wasn't nominated for Best Picture because by all accounts it wasn't very good. But we didn't go to see that. So that's just luck. It's just luck that we aren't talking about Napoleon, which wasn't nominated, because we were duped into going to see it because we didn't bother. you know?
Yeah.
And that's going to happen next year. And we're going to hit some and we're going to miss some, Sam. But let's just keep doing what we're doing.
All right. All right. That's fine. I enjoy that. Right. Do you want to be tested, Dave? I feel like you're a stickler for performing. And I've got some stupid questions to ask you. You ready? Yes, it's just a random quiz that I've got online, because why not, Dave? Let's test your knowledge of the Academy Awards, and if you win, you will get nothing. You lose. And I think that's the very least that you deserve, you piece of shit. Right, so I don't know how these questions are going to go, but you're going to have to just roll with it. So the 2000 film Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon won 4 Academy Awards, including Best Foreign Language Film. In what language was it filmed? Japanese, Russian, Mandarin, Chinese, or Korean?
What's Mandarin?
That's correct. Well done. Directed by Ang Lee.
Just to obviously make comments on this quiz, which you did not create. The trick there would have been to have more than one Chinese dialect in it, and then you really weed out the racists.
No, they were really relying on people not knowing the difference between Japanese, Korean,
that's
and
a great
Chinese.
We should do Crouching Tiger.
I've only seen it once.
Dragon, hidden,
I
tiger. Hidden Tiger? Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. You told me 25 dragon, seconds ago.
Hidden Tiger? No, it's not.
sounds
oh,
right.
Here's, so 2 out of 10 questions, here's one that I hope you get right. 1927, which 1927 film was the first ever Best Picture winner?
It'd be really funny if I could remember one of the other films that was nominated and say that instead. It was Wings.
It was Wings. Well done. Oh, you did, well, hold on.
Which
you
is also a recommend. That's a good movie.
It is. There
refer back to our episode. It's had 4 downloads, so somebody's listened to it.
Well done. In 2003, Meryl Streep became the most nominated performer in Oscar history. Who held the record before her? Jack Nicholson, Bette Davis, Katharine Hepburn, or Peter O'Toole?
I think it's Hepburn.
That's correct. Fantastic. She had 12 nominations, all in the Best Actress category, and she won for Morning Glory, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, The Lion in Winter, and On Golden Pond in 1981. There we go, Katharine Hepburn.
I've not seen any of those. I should, it's on my list a lot.
I've seen Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, which is very, very good. Very, very good. So,
is that Laurence Olivier as well?
No, it's, oh God, I know his name. Sydney Poitier.
Sorry. Yeah.
Which motion picture won the Academy Award for 1955?
Fuck, 55.
Hold on. Which motion picture won the Academy Award for 1955? Is an important line in which 1990's Best Picture nominee? What the shit? Britannia.com. Right, so
that's a very confusing question. So
the name of one of these
movies
is important for which motion picture won the Academy Award for 1955 is an important line in which 1990's Best Picture nominee, LA Confidential, yeah. Goodfellas, Forrest Gump, or Quiz Show? I don't really understand the question, Dave.
I mean, based on the fact that it's a quiz question that was asked in it, I'm going to say Quiz Show.
Correct. The 1994 movie dramatizes the 19. Oh, I get it. So, oh, right.
It focused on an incident, if that helps.
In which contestant was instructed by the show's producers to miss a question on purpose. The 1995 Best Picture winner was Marty. Right, there we go. I'm with you now. Right. In 1984, Linda Hunt won the Best Supporting Actress Oscar for her performance as a male character in which film? The Crying Game, The Year of Living Dangerously, The Killing Fields, or Victor Victoria? No idea. I think it's The Crying Game. Incorrect. It's The Year of Living Dangerously. That's your first one wrong.
I think I'm doing all right so far.
Oh, this sounds really fun. Linda Hunt portraying Billy Kwan, a photojournalist covering the political tumult of Indonesia in the 1960s.
Sounds like a classic.
That's maybe one of those Oscar... Some one of those Oscar wanky movies, but we'll leave that for another time. So, who is the only Oscar winner named Oscar? Like it. Oscar Peterson, Oscar Hammerstein II, Oscar Levant, or Oscar Isaac?
I've only heard of Oscar Isaac. But I don't think he's won an Oscar. I don't think he has won an Academy Award.
Okay, so you're going to have to go with some of the other Oscars.
The second, Oscar, whoever the Oscar something. The
Hammerstein
second.
The second is correct.
Hammerstein. Or,
best known for
that was stage. Correct. I was about to say it sounds like a made-up name.
It's correct. The stage musicals with Richard Rodgers, the songwriter, won two Oscars in the 1940s. Both
for originals.
You're doing very, very well. You've got like 5 out of 6 so far. Okay. Which of these is not a former Oscar category? Title writing, stunt coordination, original song score, or dance direction? One of those is not a former Oscar category.
They've never had a stunt category because it's a bit of a contentious thing.
Because it's like it's below
basically
them.
If they had a stunt category, I think that stunt coordinators would be able to command a higher salary for prestige movies.
Wow.
And movies don't want stunt coordinators to be able
I
to do that.
Love the cynicism. It's absolutely must be true. Must be true.
I can't remember which podcast I was listening to. Presumably, if you haven't heard this and it's one that you don't listen to, but there was an interview with somebody who's involved in, like, there's an independent award for, like, best stunt choreography and things like that. It's like an independent film award specifically for stunt people.
Yeah.
And stunts in movies. And so I was listening to it, like, last week, and they're talking in that about how, you know, they're continually asking for an Academy Award for stunt people, and continually it's been told no. So what were the other ones?
It was title writing, original song score, or dance direction. So let's see if you're correct. I'm going to press the button and...
I haven't chosen one yet.
Oh, I thought you said stunt coordination.
What was the question?
Which of these is not a former Oscar category? Title writing,
stunt coordination. Yeah, sorry. I'd misunderstood the question. Yeah, it's definitely stunt one.
It's okay. You got it. Well done. Question 8.
I can't believe I actually knew that as well.
It's very good knowledge. This is impressive. I was trying to stump you and you completely...
I'm a fucking nerd.
Oh, yeah. That is absolutely true. Marlon Brando famously refused his best Oscar for The Godfather in protest. What was he protesting? The US involvement in the Vietnam War. The film's of industry's treatment of Native Americans, flaws in the Oscar voting protest, or the anti-communist Hollywood blacklist. Your history should...
It was the treatment of Native American peoples.
Correct.
What was the name of the woman who... She accepted the award on his behalf. It was a Native woman who accepted the award.
Sachin Littlefeather was her name.
That's really, really famous.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Again, a white man has to stand up and tell the other white men off.
Yeah, well, you're going to win an award for it. Yeah,
society we live in.
Fantastic. Yeah. Who was the first African-American to win an Academy Award? Hattie McDaniel, Duke Ellington, Dorothy Dandridge, or Sidney Poitier?
What was the third one?
Dorothy Dandridge.
It was a woman. I know it was a woman.
So that's... Hattie McDaniel or Dorothy Dandridge, you're saying no to Duke Ellington and Sidney Poitier.
I think it's Hattie. And Hattie I think it was before like desegregation. It's kind of like this insane period of time where she won an Academy Award, but
couldn't sit on
at
the
time when
bus.
She wasn't allowed to sit with the white people, basically.
Incredible. Let's see if you're correct. You are. Holy shit, Dave.
This is a topic I know quite a lot. Generally,
I'm impressed. Hattie McDaniel, of course, was Mammy in Gone with the Wind. Oh, dear me. 1939. So, a very famous performance, I think probably now considered very stereotypical, but hey, you know,
we've watched some 1930s movies, and like, unfortunately, like, African-American black actors in America were pigeonholed into these, like, especially within period pieces, into these racist caricature roles, yeah, because that's the work they could get.
Yeah.
And that's what exactly audiences wanted, because they were a bunch of racist pricks. Because again, America was fucking segregated until the 60s. The civil rights movement. Fucking read about it.
Oh, geez, we're getting very excited. Right, last question then. And I think you might be just one wrong, which is very disappointing that you've got one wrong.
8 for 9.
So let's see if you can keep that 9 out of 10 score. Who won the consecutive best Oscar for Captain Courageous and Boys Town in 1937 and 1938, respectively? Gary Cooper, Spencer Tracy, Cary Grant, or Jimmy Stewart? Courageous.
Too early for Cary Grant, and I think it's too early for Jimmy Stewart. So who are the other two?
Spencer Tracy and Gary Cooper.
This is a real Sophie's Choice. I need to stop saying that after having actually googled the plot of Sophie's Choice.
Google
the plot of Sophie's Choice, listener, because it's not a fun, loving phrase we can just use when we're making a hard decision.
Oh, do I have a Snickers or a Mars bar? Oh, God.
That's a real Sophie's Choice. Why do we say that? So it's Gary Cooper and Spencer
Gary
Tracy.
Gary Cooper, Spencer Tracy, Cary Grant, or Jimmy Stewart?
I'm going to say Gary Cooper.
Ladies and gentlemen, can Dave have almost all of these correct? Rather than nearly all of them correct, the answer is no, it was Spencer Tracy.
At least I narrowed it down to which one. I knew it wasn't Jimmy Stewart, and I knew it wasn't Cary Grant. So I said Gary Cooper because I'm not familiar with Gary Cooper, really. So I'm not really familiar with
Spencer
Tracy.
Spencer Tracy is great. He's lots of good films, famously with Katharine Hepburn as well. So there we go. So, Dave, unfortunately, though, I'm really sorry. This quiz is a weird format. I didn't invent this. But unless you get the last question right, then all of the other preceding answers are nullified. So I'm afraid you leave with nothing. And that's the
fucking
end of this.
Willy Wonka rules, that bastard.
I know. I know. And I don't even have a ride in a very, very dangerous elevator.
I don't even get a suicide trip in an elevator that just shoots into the sky, because apparently that's fine. Glass elevator is fine.
Nor do you get a factory that's yours. Like, you have to go home to your hovel with all the grandparents in this.
A factory full of unfree people making chocolate for my capitalistic gain. I think I'm okay without that, mostly.
Yeah.
If I could also skip the suicide glass elevator as well. I think we call this a neutral draw.
I'm sorry, it all comes in the same package. So that's
can we at least
end?
Get Grandpa Joe out of the picture? Could he go up in the elevator? That I'm happy with.
Can we eject Grandpa Joe?
That lazy fuck lying in bed all day.
Into the sun. Yeah, I think we can. I think. Hey, listen, You're a mad billionaire now.
Sorry.
You could do whatever
Grandpa
you want.
Joe's remains, because he's probably been dead for 50 years now.
Yes. Well, the actor has. Those old people, though.
Quiz for you, Sam. What year do you reckon he died in? What year?
Okay. Well, the actor who played... So what's that, like a 70s movie? I think that he died in 1994. I think I've had a pretty good track record for shit like this. Guessing people's deaths. 1994.
No, he died in 1981, age 74.
Oh,
quite young. Well, not young, obviously.
And
he won
the
Triple Crown of Acting. He won a Tony, an Oscar, and an Emmy. Not for Willy Wonka, obviously.
Did he really? What was his name?
Harold Albertson.
Harold Albertson. We talked about the Triple Crown of Acting last week, didn't we? When we spoke about... somebody, I don't remember, go back and listen to it. That's why we record it. So there we go. Right, well, I think that's a very interesting fact to pause on. We will be back next week to talk about something that isn't the Oscars.
Unless it's Poor Things, in which case was nominated. But
oh, yeah, so we'll go back into it, yeah. So there we go. Right, well, let's get out of here. Let's end on the only way that I know how, which is glorious applause. See you next week.
UK